you're a pastor or have a pastor, this is the show for you. Let's talk about gospel-driven ministry with Jared Wilson on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad you're here. I say it often, but I mean it. You always have a place at our table. In case you're wondering, I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. And Matthew Porter, our executive producer, is here. Matthew isn't a pastor, but he has hopes. He keeps going to the golf course, and he regularly takes Mondays off. One of these days, man, somebody's going to put their hands on you, and you'll be religious just like that.
Excellent.
And our producer, Jinx, is in this little glass booth. He's close due to inflation. He used to say he could be a pastor in a half an hour with $50. Now it's still a half an hour, but it's up to $63. That's how far away he is from being an ordained minister. And our video director and one-man IT department, John Myers, is here. John, it's saying era number 10-13, and it reads, intro joke not found. Please reboot. Can you look into that? That's cheap, Matthew.
They're all cheap, Steve. It's the only kind of jokes we can afford.
I'm surprised you didn't go with the ID10 tier.
Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George likes his coffee the way he likes his donations to Key Life, extra large. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft, feminine side of the program. Kathy, did you bake anything this weekend that we should be aware of?
I did. Good bit of baking, and the leftovers I forgot to bring in today. So no, I'll bring them tomorrow.
I'm going by your house and breaking in, right?
I got some.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. Whatever.
In fact, I happened to drop in on.
We're going to make you preach next time.
Jinx was present at that meeting, eating the dessert, and I was envious. And so Kathy took mercy on me and gave me some of the blueberry pie that you all were eating. And it's so good. And I praised her so much and made her feel so guilty that she brought in some extra for me today. And it is, as we speak, in the refrigerator of our home.
Actually, so, I just felt sorry for you because Anna was out of town.
So. I know. I'm going to tell her to leave more often if I get blueberry pie like that. Our guest today is one of our favorite guys, favorite guests, and he likes us okay. Most guests come on once and refuse to go on again. But Jared, for some reason, has said yes. And it may be because he was high, but it may be that he genuinely likes coming on this program. In case you want to know, he's assistant professor of pastoral ministry at Spurgeon College. He's the author in residence at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, general editor of For the Church, and director of the Pastoral Training Center at Liberty Baptist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Jared has written a lot of books, and his newest one, if I can find it, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is Gospel-Driven Ministry, An Introduction to the Calling and Work of a Pastor. Jared, thanks for being with us.
You know, you guys always keep me on my toes, so I'm always excited to be with you. Thank you, Steve.
We like you and all, but most of the people who are listening to this broadcast on radio and watching it on our channel at YouTube are not pastors. They aspire to be ones the way Matthew does, but they are not. Why in the world would we have you on a program when you wrote a book about pastors, when by and large, pastors won't be a part of it?
Well, I would imagine that it might be good for some to kind of get a peek behind the curtain to see sort of the hidden life of their pastors, maybe help to understand their pastors a little bit better.
Should have called it Pastors After Dark or something.
Yeah, that's good.
Pastors After Hours.
I had a publisher one time. I wrote a book for pastors, and I suggested we called it Sex, Sand, and Sub, and Secret Life of a Miami Pastor. And they thought it would sell, but refused to title it as that. You know, you could sell more books if you said this is for pastors and people who want to know their secrets. If you stick with me, you're going to learn something, and that's going to be how to sell books.
Ministry Confidential. Yeah, I got it.
And I shouldn't be the one giving the advice. You know, my books always sell 3 copies. Well, 2 now. My mother used to buy one, and she's in heaven. Now that I think about it, my brother is too. So it's hard to push my books, and you're a multi-thousand million seller. So shut my mouth. Going back to this kind of thing, I was saying off the air to Jared, I'm no longer full-time at the seminary. I do dip my fingers or toes in occasionally. But this is the kind of book that would be a lead text for many of my classes. It's so important, and I haven't read anything like it. What's the difference between just simple, do the work, pastoral ministry, and gospel ministry? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. The premise of the book is indeed that there is a difference between sort of ministry as usual or business as usual and a ministry that is driven or centered on or by the good news of Jesus. And really, I try to break it down into 3 major implications. So what distinguishes gospel-driven ministry? The first is that everything relates back to Jesus, that our preaching and teaching, the way we understand the Bible, the scriptures, that all of that culminates in Jesus, so that he's the point of everything, not doing more, trying harder, kind of our sweat equity, you know, religious works, but that it all is to culminate in the message of grace and the message of Jesus. Secondly, how we understand how people change, right? So what's the dynamic of transformation? If you walk into the average evangelical church on a Sunday morning and then came out and someone asked you, you know, how do they think people change? The major impression you would get is that the way people change is you tell them to, or you give them 4 or 5, you know, steps or ways and things like that. And certainly the Bible has all kinds of practical things in it, but a gospel-driven ministry answers the question, how do people change? By saying they change by being confronted with the glory of Jesus, the finished work of Christ, actually. It's by seeing Jesus that we are transformed, that we are changed. And then finally, where the pastor finds his validation, where, you know, how he measures success, as it were. Is it in how things are going in the ministry? Is it, you know, the swelling numbers? Is it more money? Is it his platform or his, you know, cultural impact or any of those sorts of things? No, gospel driven ministry would say that the validation, the fulfillment, the justification for the minister is in what Christ has done alone. And if you find your validation there, you'll be a lot less weird when it comes to how things are going.
Jared, this book's going to save the soul of a lot of pastors.
Well, I hope so.
Well, the very fact that they are pastors shows there's something bent about them. I mean, who in the world would choose this kind of profession? We're beneath prostitutes and lawyers. And that hasn't always been true. Used to be you could do this and get a modicum of honor and respect. But now that's not true. And pastors are leaving the ministry all over the place every day. We have over 4,000 pastors on our mailing list. And I listen to their stories. And we're going to talk about this as we go along, but your book is the antidote to that.
I hope so. Yeah.
It's that important.
This is a really rough time to be a pastor, isn't it? And even over the last year and a half, like you, I've just heard from so many who are just, you know, getting burned out and frayed around the edges.
Do you feel a commission charged by God to tell your students the truth and to prepare them in the ways you talk about in this particular book?
Absolutely. Yes. Not just from my time as a minister, but wanting to train the next generation to kind of mitigate as much of this as possible, to prepare them, not just for the nitty gritty, but to center them on the grace of God.
Oh, that's so good. Of course, I add a little bit to the grace of God, and it's dangerous to add a little bit to the or anything to the grace of God. But I tell students, you got to develop a mean streak. You've got to be meaner than they are. And if you're not, you're not going to survive. And the trick is to have a mean streak and to hide it so you seem pastoral and kind and gentle and sweet. And if you're a pastor, don't thank me. I was glad to help. Guys, this is going to be a fun interview, and it's going to blow you away. Ooh, need to stick around. Jared Wilson is our guest, Gospel Driven Ministry, an introduction to the calling and work of a pastor. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, we're so glad you're hanging out with us, and we're hanging out with author Jared Wilson. His new book is called Gospel Driven Ministry, an introduction to the calling and work of a pastor. And if you're a lay person and you think this isn't for you, you need to get this book. It really will enable you to have a new respect and understanding and way to encourage your pastors in directions that Jared talks about. It's an important book, and it's a book that should be read by every pastor listening and also by the lay people who are listening to.
Jared, I'm wondering, when you're teaching in seminary or when you're just approached by an individual, like at a conference where you're speaking or whatever, that's somebody that's entertaining the idea of becoming a pastor, what would you tell them? What are a couple of things that stand out that you think are particularly important for them to know, other than it's really important to teach biblical truth? I mean, obviously you would hope that that would be at the top of their list, but I've just come off of a year of, for me personally, just some difficulties, and I don't mean for it to sound arrogant, but there just were things that I saw that I felt like somebody should have given this particular pastor some helpful, much needed information that could have saved him a lot of pain and difficulty, as well as the people to whom he was ministering?
Yeah, well, I think one of the most common sort of, I guess, weak spots is that today we assume anyone who has sort of a gift for speaking and, you know, some Bible knowledge or you know, an entrepreneurial skill or anything like that can be a pastor, right? We'll let anyone who is somewhat dynamic and a builder and a leader. And those things are good and those things are important. But the first thing I would say to someone who says, you know, I want to be a pastor, what should I do? I would point them to the qualifications for, you know, for elders in the scriptures, 1 Timothy 3, 1 Peter 5, Titus chapter 1, and have them see that, you know, to follow the call to be a pastor is to aspire to be that, to be a gentle person, to be a hospitable person, to manage your house well, all those sorts of things, because those are character issues that are, you know, underneath and beyond, you know, how gifted a speaker you are, whether you can attract a crowd, all those sorts of things. And that would, I think, eliminate, you know, it wouldn't eliminate all of the problems that we, you know, sometimes have because people are sinners. But it would eliminate some of the problems, if not a lot of them, if we actually emphasized that, you know, the Bible says these are the kinds of people who should be, should be pastors. And then the other thing would be, do they have the kind of support and affirmation of a local church? You know, are there people that they've, you know, either grown up, you know, with, or that they've worked alongside or served alongside who would say, yes, you do have the gifts and calling and we do affirm that in you? Or are they just kind of a, you know, a rogue element out on their own? And, you know, those, in my mind are kind of recipes for disaster. Unqualified people who are simply trying to build something on their own and it really becomes a means of kind of self-expression or building your own platform. Those ministries don't tend to serve people very well. They tend to serve the leaders sometimes exceptionally well, but they, you know, can be recipes for flame outs and train wrecks, I think.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And train wrecks are the church. Do you think there are a lot of people who call themselves reverend but aren't?
Sure.
Well, listen, obviously, all who call themselves reverend aren't, but I'm using it in a different sense, that are pastors that probably should be in vinyl repair.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, if you're a gifted speaker and sell, you know, you're a good salesman, right? We need more Christian salespeople out there. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
Right. I used to tell students, you know, when you're in the middle of the battle, it's no time to ask questions about whether this is your battle and whether God called you to it. You got to be the call and its connection to the church is so very important. And the reason for the call, as you said, in those passages is so important. And if they don't feel guilty after reading those passages, they should go into vinyl repair too.
Sure. Well, and also just a heart for people. I mean, one thing that's kind of rare among, you know, younger men sometimes who say that, you know, I want to be a pastor. When you kind of, you know, dig into the why or what they're looking forward to, most of them are just looking forward to preaching or leading something or building something. And those are good things to, you know, aspire to do, but it's very rare for them to say, I love people and I want to help people, you know, see Jesus or find Jesus or, you know, follow Jesus, which, you know, that's the heart of pastoral ministry. We need fewer pastors who really don't, you know, the people are incidental, you know, to their ministry. It's all about some kind of, you know, self, aggrandizement or something like that.
So true. I'm not by nature a people person.
Yeah, me either.
And when Jesus put the people of God on my heart, he screwed up my life. I mean, I was doing fine until he did that. And when he did that and I started caring, then all of a sudden this job that I was doing quite well at became very, very difficult, because people can be very, very difficult, just the way I'm very, very difficult. Hey, George, you want to pose a question? We'll probably not get to the answer till on the other side of the break, but go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. Jared, you had a chapter on leading as part of the job of the pastor. And pastor as elder, overseer, and kind of make the distinction between deacons, depending on a church's government and so forth, that deacons lead by serving, and elders and pastor serve by leading. And you start that chapter with a story that where you were in kind of a conflict in one of your church positions between the elders and the deacons over a budget process. Could you talk a little bit about that and maybe, identify what the leading role is, so to speak, for the pastor? Where does that come into play?
Listen, that's called a teaser in the industry. And so you got a good story with blood, sweat, and tears on the other side of the break. By the way, George has an interest in that chapter on leadership. That primarily was the subject of his doctoral dissertation. And he knows more about leadership than anybody else in the universe. So be careful in your answer, Jared, when you come back. Guys, we're going to take a break because this is hard work. Going to eat some cookies, drink some milk, and then, like Jesus, we're going to return.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
We're glad you're with us. You really do always have a seat at our table. We're talking with author Jared C. Wilson. You can keep up with him at jaredcwilson.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Jared C. Wilson.
Jared, before the break, I was interested in your chapter on leading, and you opened that chapter with a story about sort of, I'll call it a conflict that in a church that you were serving that between the elders and the deacons over a budget process. Could you share that and how that kind of illustrates some of the principles?
Yeah, well, what had happened was I inherited, when I went to this church, the solo pastor model, and we had a board of deacons, but no plurality of elders. So one of the things that I worked through, it was kind of a 3-year process, actually, was getting the church on board to having multiple pastors, having a plurality of eldership. And we did. We were able to establish at the end of that 3 years some additional pastors. But what I wasn't able to anticipate, and this is kind of the point of that, that leadership anecdote, was really kind of the growing pains or the transition pains of adding a board of elders to a church that had existed with a board of deacons for, eons, basically, and how those two boards would interact or should interact. And even with me kind of, explaining the biblical role of elders and the biblical role of deacons, when it came down to the nitty gritty of this budgetary process, which had always operated a particular way, I ended up with kind of, you know, a deacon board that saw themselves as sort of a veto committee of things the elders wanted to do, right? That they were somehow kind of the gatekeepers. And in the moment in that meeting where we had, you know, one particular deacon kind of irked about how the budget, you know, proposal was sort of delivered. I think he even used the words like, you know, you bring this thing from on high, as if the elders are up on Mount Sinai or something, receiving the budget proposal from the Lord himself. I don't know. In our minds, it was simply, here's what we think reflects a good budget. And now the deacons who are in charge of kind of the practical aspects, they can tweak it, revise it, you know, put, you know, all those sorts of things. But it was just initially the attitude of, you don't come and tell us what a budget ought to look like. That's solely our area. And in the moment, I just kind of apologized and kind of went passive, which is, you know, a lot of times my first kind of instinct and kind of impulse with potential conflict is to just kind of roll over and try to avoid it. And I describe in that chapter basically that this was a failure of leadership. I should have not angrily, but gently explained to this, you know, brother, reminded him of the roles of deacons and elders, because people will acclimate to your leadership and to your leadership style. And if I essentially set a pattern of kind of rolling over every time some deacon kind of, you know, does his velociraptor thing on me, you know, the little, you know, the flaps come out or whatever, then I'm basically training them to say, all you've got to do is act mean and I'll, you know, turn into an armadillo. Right. You know, I should have been able to push back. And the major leadership lesson there is, people will adjust to your leadership style. And so I needed to be more assertive. And in that sense, it's actually more pastoral to be more assertive in those kinds of situations.
Jared, just so you know, that's a mean streak. I mean, everybody who was judging and criticizing me about what I said about a mean streak, Jared just said exactly the same thing, only was nicer than I was. And I could learn something from you.
I need a Jared. Mean streak about a mean streak. Is that what you're saying?
But you're saying leaders need to lead.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You have to, you know, embrace the confidence that the gospel gives you. If the Lord is on your side and you're actually in the role that the Bible has designed, then you should operate according to that biblical design. You don't have to cower in that role.
And along with that is the teaching that goes at the pulpit level and the Sunday school and the classroom level at church, so that people understand that authority is not a nasty word that millennials have destroyed. It is, in fact, built into the very structure of the church. No matter what your ecclesiology is, authority is always a part of it. Is that right?
That's right. And it's a good thing. It can be helpful. It can be something that's abused for sure and exploited. But the original design, the structure itself, is actually a life-giving and healthy thing.
That's good. Not everybody that comes on this program agrees with me about anything. It makes me feel kind of good.
Well, let's keep talking. I find something to disagree with you on.
Channel your inner velociraptorism.
Okay.
Listen, Jared, we don't have time to ask another question because we got to pay for this thing. So we're going to take a break. But we've got a bunch of questions on the other side of the break. And we have, however, some time to kill, and I thought it would be good if we had a hymn scene, or we could
collection
personal prayers, and each person can
collection
do a penance prayer, and then we could all feel self-righteous and good.
And then we could really
ourselves.
Take up a good collection.
Then you could take
and
up
we'll
a good
take
collection.
Up, of course, George would say, make sure you take up a collection.
Today nice. Could be.
Oh, never mind.
We're out of here, but don't go away. There's a lot more to come on the other side of the break, and you don't want to miss a bit of it. he was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, you know, she seemed like a very nice lady. I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Hey, thanks for joining us on Steve Brown, etc. By the way, do you get our weekly email? It's called Key Life Connection. And it's a small thing we do to remind you that God's not mad at you. While you're thinking about it, why not go? Well, don't go until this program's over, but then go to keylife.org/subscribe.
Jared, Steve was joking earlier about, you know, my aspirations to be a pastor. The truth of it is I have been close enough to real pastors to know full well that's not my calling. And because of that, when I see a picture of a pastor, it's the first picture I have is not somebody standing up in front of a bunch of folks, you know, delivering a sermon. It's somebody who has gotten some news about somebody in his congregation that's bad, and they are heartsick in a way that they can't really escape from. I mean, they carry that weight in a way that you know, maybe nobody else really even does. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit, what's a snapshot of what you've seen as the life of a pastor? What's some things that maybe people don't know about what it's like to live in that calling?
Yeah, I think what the average Christian may not get is kind of that low grade, in the always kind of humming in the background kind of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, Paul talks about that. You know, what's interesting is he lists all these sort of afflictions, you know, they threw rocks at me, they, you know, I was shipwrecked, all these sorts of things. And then he's at the end of this long list of afflictions, he says, and on top of all of that, there's the daily pressure of the, you know, of my anxiety for all the churches. And I don't think he means like, you know, the sinful kind of worry. I think he just means you're carrying this load, you know, that you're accountable, that you know, that a flock has been stewarded to you. That's the kind of thing that would keep me up at night, you know, since not being a pastor, I sleep a lot better than I did. And part of that was because I just knew, like, I'm responsible for these people. And, you know, now, of course, every church member is, you know, we are our brother's keeper. We're all responsible for each other in that sense. But I don't think the average layperson really quite understands that load that a pastor carries. So it's just always there. You can't turn it off. It's not the kind of thing that at 5 p.m. if you go home, or 6 p.m. when you go home, you're just thinking, okay, well, that's done. And I'll think about it again tomorrow. Because you're carrying, you know, the hurts, because that counts, you know, because you care about that person, you know, that you're sitting across from in the coffee shop or in the counseling room or in the hospital room, because you care about them, you're always carrying them around. And so I think that is what leads to a lot of burnout that a lot of non-pastors sometimes don't get, right? Because they think, well, I mean, you know, all you do is read and you get up and talk about, you know, talk about Jesus. And it's so much deeper for good pastors, you know, those who take it seriously, which in my experience is the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
Is, you know, are those who just, they can't turn it off. It's just always, always kind of there. Yeah. That's, I think, you know, the biggest kind of uniqueness yeah. that a lot of people don't get.
And that made me think about the going back to the value of the book for the layperson, because, you know, if you were to put together any kind of team of any kind, I think ideally other people on the team would also be leaders in the sense of they understand what it's like to be the person out front. There's an empathy there. And so I think that's a kind of another value of this book is for the layperson to go, oh, that's the ins and outs of really yeah. what it's like to pastor. I think I have a deeper level of empathy now for my pastor.
Yeah, it's a sense of kind of showing the cards. I'm going to talk about in a previous book as well. I think good leadership is helping people understand, you know, why you're making this, you know, decisions and not just delivering these decisions from on high. But I call it, you know, you're showing your cards. Hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm working with. And this is why I made this decision. And, you know, it's a good way to just kind of bring people along so they don't feel like, you know, a sense of disconnect. But I think that's true, you know, on the other end as well, is if we seek to understand our pastors and what they're, you know, kind of going through and the kind of things that keep them up at night, then we'll have a deeper sense of appreciation for them. I think more motivation to support them and encourage them. You know, my job, I feel now as a church member, I direct a residency at our church and that sort of thing. But I feel like my number one job is to be as low maintenance a church member as I possibly can be and to be an encourager to my pastor so that when they see me coming, they're not thinking, oh no, here comes Jared, but they're, you know, glad to see me, that I'm someone that they can be themselves with, that they can kind of, you know, let their hair down, you know, when I'm around, that they don't have to, you know, hold their breath when I'm around, that I'm a life-giving presence with them. And a lot of that is driven, all of that is driven by having been in that role and realizing that people like that are sometimes few and far between.
You said earlier that the church and reflects the leadership of the pastor of the church. Is there something to be said about a pastor creating the nest where he resides? I mean, if you're legalistic, if you beat people over the head, if you're condemning and angry, aren't you creating your own house and makes it very difficult to live in it? And is it important for a pastor to be gospel driven for his own sake?
Well, certainly, right? I mean, the measure by which you judge will be the measure upon which you know, you will be judged. I think there's you know, some biblical guidance about that. I have a friend who once said, whatever the pastors are, the church will become. And I think that's a, you know, eventuality. I think that's something just over time. That's kind of what I was describing in terms of people like acclimating to your leadership. But yes, if you are a domineering, you know, presence, if you're a legalistic presence, you're modeling that for your church over time, they're going to adopt that persona. And when you most need them to be gracious, you're going to, you know, find yourselves, you know, out of luck because you've trained your people to not respond to sin with grace, but with kind of the cracking the whip of the law. So to be, you know, a gospel driven leader is certainly, I think, in one's best interest.
You know, maybe we could talk about this on the other side of the break, you gave.
Except it's the last segment.
Oh, this is it. Well, I guess we're just going to have to get the book. Dadgummit. And that's called This Gospel Driven Ministry. And it's by Jared C. Wilson. What's the C stand for?
Stands for Coy.
Coy.
Yeah, that's my grandfather's name. Yeah, Coy.
I like that. I didn't know if it was Coy, like middle name, or Coy as in the quality.
Well, I guess it could be both, but
it could be both. Is that a good? Is that, should we enumerate that among the qualities?
I think I'm the second most famous Coy. The first famous was one of the Dukes of Hazzard cousins that came in when Bo and Luke
had the salary
renegotiation.
Jared, we got to talk again for sure for your next book, and also talk about the dark days of the Dukes of Hazzard that we should all be forgotten. All right.
Absolutely.
We're coming back on the other side of the break. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Make sure to tune in and see which is which. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini-books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini-book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini-books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini-book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
And you are listening to Steve Brown, Etc. Thanks for spending time with us. Steve got raptured, so it's just us. Ethan's down here now.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, we'll get it back together next time. By the way, if you have not heard Talk the Walk, you guys know Steve's book. We now have it on audiobook. It's read by Gilbert Gottfried. That would be horrible. It's read by Steve, and it sounds wonderful. Go to keylife.org/talkthewalk for details. We've been talking to Jared Wilson about his book, Gospel Driven Ministry. And as a way of wrapping up in just kind of like the last 60 seconds or so, Jared, could you tell a story about the lady who had the conversation with you about the gospel is great, but.
Oh.
And we lost.
I'm out.
Jared. Oh, there you go. Are you there?
Am I here?
Yeah. Yes.
All the I pastors see you guys are getting raptured.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Is it not working?
It keeps breaking up.
Keeps freezing.
Anyway, as I'm remembering the story, the woman had some nice things to say as a pretext to saying, you know, you talk about the gospel and that's all great, but we need other things. And I think what Jared would say and does say in the book is the gospel is it. This is what we have. It's our only hope. It needs to inform our lives and of course our ministry as well. Jared, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would say anyone who says that they need something other than the gospel.
Couldn't said it better myself. Kathy, who do we have on next week?
Next week we have Eric Mason, who is a pastor of Epiphany Church in Philly. And he has compiled a book with some other authors. He's obviously has a significant part of it called Urban Apologetics.
That sounds interesting.
I know. I think so.
Well,
so,
I'm going to tune in. I think Jared's going to tune in.
You do that. Make sure you're here, not just tuning in just in case we lose Steve again.
Exactly. Yes. Tune in to find out who drops off next. Who knows? Maybe Kathy, maybe Matthew. I should just freeze right now. No, not cool. Guys, thank you for joining us. Jared, thank you for joining us. Sorry.
Thank you guys.
Absolutely.
Sorry. This last segment was as awkward as a first date with Matthew. That's really saying something. Guys, we're out. Please join us next week. Until then, remember, be safe. Stay dangerous.